I'll reconvene the hearing. Mr. McCall.
I'm also at point three, if that's...
Yes.
Transport agency submitted on objective 30.2.4 and policy 30.2.4.5, requesting they be amended so that they are broadened to capture the location of land use developments. Transport agency suggests the location of land use developments and transport networks can also influence vehicle use and therefore energy efficiency. In my opinion, the transport agency's suggested amendments are appropriate because they promote energy efficiency and are consistent with the goals of the strategic directions chapter of the proposed district plan, which sets out the strategic direction for the management of growth, land use and development in the district. They are also consistent with the objectives and policies of the urban development chapter 4 of the proposed district plan, which aims to manage the spatial location and layout of urban development within the district. In my opinion, it is appropriate to ensure strategic issues are embedded in more than one subsequent chapter. The Transport Agency submitted on 30.2.7 objective, which, as notified, fails to recognise that it's not always possible to locate infrastructure outside of special character areas or areas of high landscape values. I suggest this is inconsistent with the section 30.1.2 utilities, which highlights that some utilities have specific locational needs that need to be accommodated for their operation. I consider the qualifier, where practical, should be added to this objective to recognise that infrastructure sometimes has locational requirements. Transport agency submitted on the definition of utility, requesting an amendment to the definition to include an additional bullet point as follows: structures for transport on land by cycleways, rail, roads, walkways, or any other means. The Transport Agency's proposed definition is the same as that used to define infrastructure in the Resource Management Act. In my opinion, the Transport Agency's suggested amendment should be adopted to assist plan users, given many other utilities are already singularly identified within the proposed definition. Policy 35.2.1.8 enables the operation of informal airports in association with temporary events, subject to minimising adverse effects on adjacent properties. The effects of informal airports are addressed in Rule Notified 35.4.9, redrafted 35.4.7, but the effects are limited to hours and duration of operation only. Transport agency concerns with the operation of informal airports are related to driver distraction from aircraft, particularly the takeoff and landing of helicopters. Consequently, the Transport Agency suggests a rule should be added, or the existing rule amended, to give effect to the policy 35.2.1.8.
Just on your paragraph 5 regarding the structures.
Yes.
Transport on land.
Yes.
Questioning council officers yesterday, they were concerned that might open it up to non-network utility operators providing such facilities. Would NZTA really only be concerned for when they're provided by network utility operators?
Yes.
Did you have a chance to look at the 42A report, just in terms of the 32.4 and the policy that you just referred to in your summary? Just, was that included in the analysis within the 42A report? So literally, you've highlighted about objective 30.24. It's just that I was trying to find it.
Yep.
Some discussion yesterday about the in your point five in your submission, in your summary, structures for transport on land by cycleways, rails. Is that rails or trails?
That's the definition of these rails in the RMA.
So is it referring to wider transport rather than just
yes
using TA?
Yeah. So the definition of the RMA is. Let's take a straight from it. So it's infrastructure and point G, structures for transport on land by cycleways, rail, roads, walkways, and the other means. So that is red coded down on the RMA at the suggested.
Okay. Related to that, when NZTA is a requiring authority, network utility operator.
Yes.
Are you required under, I don't know, the Land Transport Management Act or something like that, to consider other things other than roads as a way of providing or for funding or that sort of thing?
You
things
mean?
Like, what is it?
Cycleways,
rails, walkways, and other means.
Yeah, we haven't got involved in rails, but
right.
we do look at the whole of the transport network
right.
and their connections, and we have built and funded dedicated walkways and cycleways.
Mm-hmm.
Most recently, we have. Upper Harbour in Dunedin to St Leonard's, and we're in the detailed design phase of the St Leonard's to Port Chalmers, which is taking the cyclists and pedestrians off the state highway carriageway and having a dedicated facility for them.
No.
That's not unique to Otago.
No. In doing that, do you...
What you mean.
Yeah. In doing that, do you... Would the provision of that cycleway, walkway be within the designation, or is it something you'd separately designate, or how would you?
Yeah, we could designate that, and most likely would, or sometimes we would build them and then hand them over to council.
Oh, yeah.
But some of them would be within our designation as well.
No, thank you.
Did we have questions?
And I'm all good, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's clarified one thing, because yesterday we thought that was a spelling mistake. It's
yes.
Supposed to be trails. Now we know where it comes from.
Yes.
Thank you.
afternoon, Mr.
Good afternoon.
We have your summary provided.
Chapter 30, Energy and Utilities. RealGen wishes to ensure non-renewable electricity generation activities such as the use of diesel generators is adequately provided for within the proposed district plan framework, especially because in remote locations such as Walter Peak, renewable electricity generation is currently not a viable option. In addition, such non-renewable electricity generation is essential to the operation of many tourism and farming businesses across the district. Real Journey supports proposed policy 30.2.1.2, as this policy allows for the operation, maintenance, repowering and upgrade of non-renewable electricity generation activities across the district. Nevertheless, we believe policy 30.2.3.7 needs to be more permissive to acknowledge that non-renewable electricity generation is an essential activity in remote locations where connection to the national grid is not a practical alternative. There is significant demand to provide Wi-Fi coverage across the district to satisfy overseas visitors' expectations, leading to the need to install satellite dishes and other telecommunication aerial in remote areas to access internet from providers such as Farmside. Further, most of RealJourney's operational support functions, such as our reservation system, accounting system, health and safety management system, rely on internet connectivity to ensure all these systems operate in real time. For example, in the case of our reservation system, real-time connectivity is essential to ensure double booking does not occur. Consequently, it is important to the district's tourism industry to ensure the proposed district plan provides for the installation and maintenance of such infrastructure, including when such equipment needs to be relocated within outstanding natural landscapes. Real Journeys asserts that proposed rule 30.4.23 needs to encompass more than river flood protection works because it's very important for the district to ensure that repairs and maintenance to most forms of existing flood protection works are equally enabled. Chapter 35, Temporary Activities and Relocated Buildings. Real Journey supports the change to Objective 35.2.5 as it provides for temporary storage in all locations. The Council recognises the contribution that temporary events make to the economic, social and cultural well-being of the district. However, from our perspective, it seems short-sighted to restrict the permitted duration of temporary events to 3 days only. We appreciate that the Council wishes to provide a more permissive regime for events held on public land compared to events held on private land, ostensibly in the belief that events on public land provide a greater public benefit. However, an organisation could obtain a one-off dock permit to operate a non-public event on public conservation land. Moreover, events on private land are often public events, such as the Winter Games held at the Cadrona Alpine Resort. We believe, regardless of the designation of the land used to hold an event, events give rise to effects. The effects on neighbouring land, in fact, depend on the location of the event, not the land status of the site where the event is held. Noise. Regarding proposed rule 36.4.2, Real Journeys asserts that this rule should be broadened to encompass vessel signals to ensure ships do not breach the noise standards when making the requisite signals when manoeuvring. For instance, when a vessel reverses out of a berth the skipper is required to give 3 short blasts on the ship's whistle prior to reversing. Many of the vessels operating in the district need to reverse out of their berths as a matter of course. Consequently, such signals are used multiple times per day in some locations. Real Journey supports the permitted activity status for noise emissions from emergency and backup generators. Real Journeys also supports the removal of noise testing requirements for motorised craft from the proposed district plan. Nevertheless, we are still concerned about the likely non-compliant status of our vessel noise emissions between 2000 hours and 0800 hours. Real Journeys believes setting lower noise emission standards between 2000 hours and 0700 hours would be more enabling for water-based public transport activities. Moreover, Real Journeys contends non-compliance with the proposed rule 36.5.15 should be provided for as a discretionary activity, not a non-compliant activity.
With your paragraph 3.1 regarding the signalling noise, I think I'm not a noise expert, but I can confidently say they're not caught because the noise limits are done by an average measurement over 15 minutes. And very unlikely the signals would go. If they went on 15 minutes, it would be an emergency. And I don't think anyone would mind.
I think
that one you're quite safe.
Right.
I just wanted to clarify with you with the Winter Games. Is that really a temporary event, or is it just a skiing activity which happens to be an event?
At Cadrona, they hold a number of different events. Like, they might hold like this secondary school skiing championships.
I used to ski at Cadrona, so I understand how many events they are. But I'm wondering whether those actually are different. Are not covered by the rules which says ski activities are permitted.
I suppose the thing we're thinking about is, and maybe this will be covered with some of the zoning stuff, is we're opening up the likes of Cadrona to mountain biking activities. So you could see that it would be an ideal venue for some sort of mountain biking race event.
Yeah, like they have in Rotorua.
Yeah, which is outside of what occurs now. But I suppose it depends on, we have asked for other summer activities to be provided in those zones.
Okay. I think, yes, it's a matter of whether it's a temporary event or it's an event that really should just be provided for on the zone rules. The question that we're faced with, isn't it?
Yeah, and there are one-off events like, it's not a very good example, but there's one of those adventure races that occurred here in 2014 and they're coming back in 2017 where they raced from here to Milford Sound. And it was mostly international teams. Well, you can't really argue that that's a regular event.
Is it anyone on the lake disturbed by it at 7 o'clock in the morning, or is it really would it disturb anyone on land?
Well, that's my concern about these rules, that, you know, they usually leave at low revs and come back at low revs, but when they're out cruising at full speed out in the middle of the lake, they it's not a quiet vessel, especially in the hours of darkness where it, you know, it can be calm, and we know that noise carries across the water. But saying that, we've never received any noise complaints because we are conscious coming back into the wharf late, bringing staff back in, that you don't want to wake up a neighbour.
Do you stay overnight in Queenstown often?
Me?
Yes.
No.
No. I realise you live in town now.
Yeah. And if I do, I bring my earplugs.
Well, now the reason I say to ask is with the night flights now.
Yeah.
The jets coming and going at 9 o'clock at night, and I was wondering if you were able to compare that level of noise with the noise received on land from the fuel window bus.
Well, it's one of those difficult things because I'm hardly ever on the land when it's coming and going on the boat.
Yes, if you're on the boat it sounds noisy, but I'm just wondering whether if you were in Box Cove or something, whether you'd even notice it. And it may be an issue that the officers need to look at is the point of measurement for those. It may be near consideration of the point of measurement. At the moment it says 25 metres from the boat, but when you're in the middle of the lake, it's very unlikely for there to be anyone else within 25 metres.
Yes. Well, particularly at night, because you go out of your way to make sure that, because once you get within 200 metres of another craft, you've got to slow down to 5 knots anyway.
Yes, but the same when you get within 200 metres of the shore, you can slow 5 knots. And presumably at 5 knots, you can barely hear the pieces.
Yeah, it's much quieter.
Evidence in 3.1 to 3.3 where you talk about that in your summary around energy and utilities, just about those changes to the policy. When I read in the rules at 3.4.6, despite what the policy says, non-renewable electricity generation is a permitted activity.
Yeah.
And so I just want, if that's the case, is the changes to the policy still required?
I suppose it is the, we can, where it says consider policy 30.2.37, consider non-renewable energy resources including standby power generation and standalone power systems where adverse effects can be mitigated. Trying to make the point that in lots of places the only economic choice is diesel generation.
Yeah. With the generators in this particular rule that talks about generators that are standalone power system on remote sites that don't have connection to. So I just wondered whether that kind of covered it in terms of the actual practical implication of it in terms of a rule rather than just in the policy.
Yeah, I did find that contradictory.
Yeah. In 3.6 of your evidence, you talk about the Cadrona Alpine Resort, and it's got a satellite dish, or at least one. Sorry,
yes.
I haven't been there for many years, so I don't know. How big is it?
I believe it's 1.8 metres.
Do they come in, I'm trying to understand here, but do these things come in standard size?
Yes, they do. And it's old money, it's 4 feet, 6 feet.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's an American based technology.
And so they come and stand. So, do you know where else, any other examples where one of these dishes. The reason for the questions is because where it relates to in this utilities chapter, because it's a district wide rule,
yeah.
Those rules are going to apply across every zone, so it could be here. What I'm trying to do is work out: why do you need ones that are so big?
You need them larger where you have adverse weather. Like in Milford Sound, we have to have 6 foot size dishes, smaller in the rain events. You have no single signal.
Unless you've got a big dish.
Yeah.
Yep.
Is it, with those issues, is it similar to the non-renewable generators, the remote sites?
Yes.
Are the ones that need those facilities. When it's not someone like Vodafone or Spark, then it's the landowner needs it.
Yes.
It's the remote sites. Mm-hmm. And maybe the rules need to reflect that circumstance.
Yeah, so for Cadrona, we're bouncing a signal from the snow farm across to get internet access.
Right.
But I don't know what's at the snow farm.
Well, they'll probably have very good access up there for their for their testing.
Yeah.
Vehicle testing systems, probably got fibre running into it.
Yeah.
No, Mr. Lee, it'll probably be 20 foot, never mind.
Sit on that side of the plane and then come in. Now, so that what the chair was just suggesting, that is a potential solution to that. Thank you. Thanks very much.
I did. I think you actually answered it. With regard to the ball movements in your evidence, I was just wondering if you had regular complaints, if there are any instances of complaints from you.
No, we don't get complaints. There is the potential in the evenings if we do a circuit around Frankton for a charter, but to overcome that, we would turn that for the install, turn the outside speakers off, so that because most people find that the most annoying thing, just the chug is it's the uneven noise.
But even last night, I heard the whistle from the urns line.
Yeah.
It was quite a pleasant. It's coming down.
Not unwanted sound.
What is the definition between noise and
nuisance?
Yes,
sound. Not the unwanted kind.
I was just wondering, because that would sort of, if you were getting complaints, obviously there's a grounds for that's all.
Thank you very much, Ms. Blair.
Thank you. It's in the chapter that you're now responsible for. You picked up the bit about that rule regarding remote things.
Yes, so the remote sites. Thank you.
Good. No. Just to make sure. Thank you.
Yeah, well, just to chime in, I suppose the thing about the remote sites is they're so often in outstanding natural landscapes, so you've got this nice conflict.
I will adjourn until 11:30 tomorrow morning.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.